Did you know we were going to see you again today?
No, I just thought it was going to be one doctor.
You want him back?
Well, I don't care. It's immaterial to me.
Okay. You knew you were coming back today, but you thought it would be the same doctor.
No, I thought it was just going to be one doctor.
Just one time. Yesterday.
I didn't know about today. I mean, I knew I was going to talk to Josh, but I didn't know the whole group would be there.
Oh. Well, I was in the group yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't tell chance to know everyone.
And I wanted to start today by telling you my feelings about yesterday. I came away from it with a headache.
Well, I had a headache too, so not exactly headache. I tried to read a book and I couldn't.
And I had two main feelings about yesterday. One of them is a little bit complicated. I felt you entertained us and we enjoyed it. But that was kind of a dirty trick on you for us to enjoy your entertainment.
I'm glad you're entertained.
The second feeling I had, and I'd like to find out some more about that today, is that you have been helped someplace along the line.
I don't know. I had shock treatment. I know when I had insulin and some insulin and deep insulin.
I didn't mean help in that kind of way. I meant I had the feeling you had been helped by some person rather than something artificial.
I don't know.
Then there's something else I wanted to tell you. After they told me they wanted me to talk to you today, as I was going to sleep last night, I thought about you. And I was sort of half asleep. This was half a dream. When you're half asleep, half awake. You and I were there in this place, wherever it was, and I was offering you a mushroom.
Oh, dear.
And I got the feeling that you were afraid to take it because so many mushrooms are poison. And then immediately, you changed into a goose. A goose or a duck, I'm not sure which, which had two heads and two necks. And one pointed in each direction, in the opposite direction.
I didn't know what to think about that.
Well, I wasn't asking you what you thought about it. I just wanted to
tell you. Something funny.
Sort of bring you up to date on where I am with you.
Well, that's nothing. I had a dream that I would end up back in the hospital, and I did.
I don't know what you're asking me, but I'd like to tell you that I think you're capable of anything you dream.
Well, I dreamed that I had a tooth that needed to be extracted, and I didn't want it taken out, and they said, you need to take it out of your own room. Oh, we'll give you shock treatment and take it out. And I said, no, I don't want shock. And he said, well, I don't care. You're going to get it anyway, and you're going to get that tooth taken out.
I felt kind of mad when you were saying that.
I can't help it. That's the truth. That's what happened.
I wasn't mad at you.
I also dreamed that my brother-in-law was in love with me, but he married my sister instead, and I couldn't figure that one out because I never met my brother-in-law until after I got out of this place. I'd only seen him once or twice.
I can't figure that one out either.
I can't either. But I've dreamed about him twice. Another time he was helping you and nobody else would. Well, more than that, it was quite complicated, but...
I felt sort of excited when you said that. I could feel my heart rate speed up.
Well, he's the only one that would talk to me when I was old, not the only one, but... And my other brother was just... He said that was the worst thing he could do, was to talk to me. And I don't know where he gathered his information, because they claimed they never talked to the doctors and that out here when I was let out, so I didn't know where he got his information, but... My brother-in-law had a lot of talk to me. He said that was the worst thing he could do for me.
I was beginning to get tired of your talking.
I don't blame you. Everybody needs to take that after a while.
What I was thinking is that it's quite an experience to look into your eyes. It's kind of frightening to me. And yet I like to.
Now, don't try to hypnotize me.
Well, I felt it was sort of the other way around. And I felt like asking you if you could help me with this. Why should I be scared to look into your eyes?
You should be.
But why am I?
I don't know. Maybe you're a hypnotist. You hypnotize yourself.
I sort of relaxed me when you said that, as though there must be some truth in it.
You look like, what's that movie star's name? He's on TV a lot. Can't think of his name. He's always called in on these criminal cases when they can't. McGraw? I don't know what his name is.
I don't want to pardon you. I liked it when your foot touched mine.
No, but...
Well, I think that's one of the exciting things about seeing you. I have no idea what now. What's coming next.
I think you're handing me line for a specific purpose, but I don't know just what it is.
Does it matter?
Yeah, it does, because I don't like people to mislead me.
I think you're right.
I think you're trying to hypnotize me, but I don't think it's working.
Would you like to be hypnotized?
No, I wouldn't. I'm afraid of being hypnotized.
I'll try not to.
I've been listening to that for 3 days. It's beginning to get on my nerves.
You think she's feeling anything?
I don't know. I know she doesn't want to be locked up, though.
Or do you think she's just trying to feel something?
I think she's been giving so much medication she doesn't know what she's doing.
Would you like a cigarette?
No, thank you. I don't smoke.
Well, I sure like to, because you still frighten me when I look in your eyes. I get very tense. But I'm not going to, because I don't want to hide from you.
I don't think you're hiding, but I don't want to be hypnotized either.
Sure don't blame you for not trusting me. I don't trust you either.
Good, I'm glad I'm not to be trusted. I wish you'd sell those glasses. Don't let me put them on.
I don't think it's too important, but I feel like telling you that I'm very tense with you.
No, that feeling is mutual. I wish you'd quit that screaming, that's what I wish. I don't think that's going to help.
It doesn't bother me. In fact, more than wishing she would quit screaming, I think I'll kind of wish I were there with her.
Not me. That's too much. I've been listening to it for 3 days. It's getting on my nerves. I can't even say that my knees tickle all the time.
Tickle or tingle?
Tickle.
You don't like that?
No, I don't. Should I? How would you like your knees tickled all the time?
I think I'd like them.
Well, you wouldn't. I can tell you that now. They don't tickle like when you tickle. They just tickle.
It's annoying.
Very annoying.
I'll tell you what came to mind when you said it. It's a silly old saying that doctors tell patients when they've had a paralyzed arm and it starts tickling. And the doctor says, you should be glad because it means it's coming back to life. And patients always think it's full of crap.
Maybe I don't want to come back to life, though.
That's what came to my mind. It was something about you coming back
to
life.
I don't mind being living or being dead, but I don't care for life imprisonment. That's about what you get when you come back to life.
This is kind of the way I see you, too. I don't feel that you're alive.
I'm not.
And I don't feel that you're dead. I just feel like you're in prison. Oh, I almost forgot to tell you one of the most important feelings I had about you yesterday.
I think you're hanging another line, but...
I do too. I'll skip it. Got any ideas how I can quit hanging the line and get really relaxed with you here? Talk straight, quit lying to you.
Well, you're talking now, but I just don't like people to tell me something that isn't true.
I sure don't blame you. But I'm asking you, do you have any idea how I can quit doing that?
Oh, you're the doctor. I'm just a patient.
Well, you're a human being. You have feelings. You have ideas.
I just like to go home and forget everything.
You want to go back to your room now?
No, I said go home. Going back to my room is not going home.
I thought you were talking about you and me.
I don't have a private room anyway. I'm sleeping in the dormitory.
Suddenly felt glad that you had been courageous enough to take off the glasses.
I thought of a word called peristaltic this morning, and I don't even know where I got it from, but I knew what it meant.
I sure know what it means, too.
That is, I did, and I didn't know what it meant.
I have a silly idea that you're answering my question.
I have a silly idea that you're trying to hypnotize me.
You think I'm afraid you're hypnotizing me?
No, why should you be? You're the hypnotist.
I'm scared. My hands are sweating. I'm shaking.
Well, maybe you got a cigarette reaction is off.
No, I have a Loretta reaction.
No, oh, I don't think that's true. I think you're just telling me that.
I don't think you believe what you say.
I'm not going to contradict you.
I had a feeling you wouldn't. I'm glad.
This threatened her and frightened her. It undermined her usual defense of talkativeness and verbal dueling. And at the point where she began to feel some communication with him, she tried to resort again to the defense of the power struggle by insisting that he was trying to hypnotize her, by insisting that this was a struggle between them. And something in her had to reconstitute the fact, the event, that he would not permit himself to fight with her, and I think this was unnerving to her. And the dramatic change was the change from talkativeness and clowning to a feeling of anxiety and tension with the loss of the usual defense. And I thought that it was beautifully handled within limits in view of the circumstance.
Oh, I felt like he was saying
Dr. Lee Roberts.
I want to go home. Now, I always assume the patient's talking about her and me, no matter what she said.
Dick, I want to ask you about something. Several times, I was sitting behind you, several times, I felt you were going from the borderline of technique to feeling, technique to feeling, and I thought of all the stuff written on the double bind. You know, when you communicate on one level and you're saying something on another level. And at these points, I felt that's where the contact began to get a little shaky. And I felt that you're saying to her, yes, I'm concentrating more on technique now than on you, was the point at which she was helped, because you were being honest with her.
I intuitively double-mind schizophrenic patients in the beginning of that.
And
for a long time I felt terrible about this, but I have come to not feel terrible about it because I think it puts me in the position of doing their kind.
So
then they get mad at me about it, and I'm glad to hear them get mad about it, whereas the parents would be able to refuse it.
Are you always comfortable in your capacity to extricate yourself from the double mind? Or is that why you use
tolerance? Yes. I'm not saying I extricate myself. I'm saying I'm proud of them for not tolerating the mind. But I go in and deliberately, unconsciously deliberately to get back to it. And sometimes I'm horrified at this, but it seems to be an unconscious technique whereby I become as bad as the parent. Well, I'd like for somebody to answer a question for me. I was terribly tense through the whole interview and never got over it.
Well, what I was going to offer as a comment, I thought you terminated the comfort to your own tenseness.
Well, I declined to terminate the first time I thought she asked to, because I didn't want to terminate out of my own anxiety.
I had no idea
previous to the interview that I could relate to her on a positive basis. It seemed utterly fantastic to me that this was even possible.
I think we proved it was.
And I think you were tense because there was never any contact between the two. You were exactly different things. You were saying one thing and you were saying another. I just went on
consistently. I think on a subverted level, it was considerable communication in the air. Were you conscious of the constant edging up of both her feet and attempt to beat you?
Yeah, I like it.
It was confused.
Just make a part of it. Yesterday, I
said part of me.
Maybe right after that, you can do it edging up.
I don't see what you're talking about.
Well, she's a rich kid.
You are not asking nothing. You're receiving her communication.
I think it's about you receive communication in this sense. Not always, but sometimes very well. In that your next response shows that implicitly you must have received hers. It's all right, that's mostly what ordinary conversation is, but I think her aggression is as frightened of life as most people in her state. I felt written down the deepest thing I felt that you said there. I felt you only can't perceive it. It's been about life and death, I would have really wanted to understand that.
Well, now, if you remind me of two breaks I had on. One, Max telling me I have to keep my breaks up in here. And John telling me to cut the interview short. And I respect both of them enormously. So I'm sure that was part of my answer. She was taking care of me when she challenged me on my sincerity at that time. Because what I was going to tell her was that I had forgotten, was that my feeling of how terrified she was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I feel now that if I had told her this, she would have had to deny it. And she didn't want to put me in this embarrassing position. And she protected me from an embarrassing situation by stopping.
Worn out. But when I was sitting behind you, Dick, and I was thinking of what Carl was talking about with the eyes, there was a characteristic about this woman in terms of our discussion yesterday, Joel. I felt, beyond being frightened, she was terribly frightened of her own aggression. She was very hostile.
And so was I, and I told her.
And that's what you were talking about, and maybe that's what Harriet sensed with this breakthrough,
yeah.
But that she could become violently angry, and she was frightened of it. And so she couldn't decide which role she should play.
I think the reason I felt that she would not do that in here was because I was able to tell her that I was scared.
I think she was not.
But of course, the one thing she can't tolerate is quite the good.
Somebody being more irrational than she.
She can't tolerate that?
That's right.
And it makes a difference.
You were much more irrational than she was.
Indeed, I wanted to be damn clear with her that I can be crazy.
And this poor girl is grasping out for some possibility of rationality, and you're regressive. So I think that you have a damaged ego. You don't threaten it so directly with the consequent anxiety.
that comes up, which only leads to a remobilization of defense in terms of, I don't trust you, you're trying to get me back.
You want any test?
That there could be some communication between the two levels.
There was a point where I did what you're suggesting, and I should have done more. That was when I told her I didn't trust her.
So why did you tell her that?
Well, I started to say because I felt it, but that's not quite true. There was more technique.
That's what I felt.
But I think technique is exactly what you're talking about. Here's something for your ego, so you won't be so troubled about what we're doing, about my feeling.
Yeah, I thought that this was an artifact, when you said, I don't trust you.
Yeah, I didn't feel that was technical.
But it was technical. It was by way of saying, I'm not the one with the power, you are the one with the power. And she said, you're handing me
the power. All I'm saying is that I was doing what you were referring to, I think.
I can't help but come back in here and predict the experiencing. Most of the time, especially in discussing this stuff with this church, I can really let other people have their own way of working with people and realize, sure, it's my own way. This is surprising how deeply I feel in an actual specific situation, how much of a partisan I have become. What I'm going to say now is definitely partisan, but I can't help but feel so disturbed by the fact that we are so convinced that all the judgments have to be in us. We get to know it. Your ego is strong enough to take this and to then yield a little to her unconscious. And does she mean by herself this what I mean by it? Sure, I know that what she means by it. So, the hell you do. I feel like saying all of that stuff. And my feeling is that there is an in-between kind of way. It curiously enough happens to be the way I work. Combining it with other things you just said, it seems to me that when she was afraid you were hypnotizing her, I feel it really would have helped to have tried to understand that, which would have led into the kind of thing you were just saying. I mean, if one had responded, you really are scared that I'm going to somehow exercise power over you. Yeah, and it was unsure. That means the kind of fear you're talking about. And I'm not sure about this thing. Any angle. But there, I would say...
Dr. Holt.
You don't know.
Dr. Holt.
I don't either. I had hunches, but I don't know. And I would have liked to have responded. Somehow this experience had real meaning for you, that this is a turn that somehow seemed to make some kind of sense to you. And then I think she would have felt very much drawn to explain what kind of sense it did make to her. And then I would know whether she was, gradually begin to know whether she was talking about a positive experience with Ellis, or whether out of the fact, out of that experience, or the total experience, or things going on in the hospital or whatnot, because this is another meaning that occurred to me, whether she felt that the life does have a rhythm, and things do digest and move on through. I just feel we would not need to make all the judgments and all the decisions in ourselves. Then if we have the best resource for knowledge right there in the other chair.
Carla, can I ask you a question since I traveled over to that mile?
My name is George and I just interviewed.
What if you'd start with her, and from an analytic point of view, I'd be interested in going into the peristalt, but it's been my clinical experience and sad history that she could regale me for months with elaborate conundrums on peristalsis spelled backwards, forwards, up and down.
Not if you responded to the feeling. If you'll notice the way I responded, it wasn't about what is the meaning that came to you. The context of feeling in which she expressed that was that here was something important. She didn't know why, she didn't know where it came from and so on, she didn't understand the point. Right, that feeling I would respond to. And then she starts to give me some elaborate intellectual thing, which I don't believe she would at that moment, but okay, so she does. Then I would respond to the feeling context to that, but I guess your feeling is now that really it's the precise definition of this that makes so much difference to you.
Well, now, I would like to ask something that I don't feel that I think. What suppose you did state that you were hypnotizing her and proceeded to hypnotize her? What do you think would happen at that point? I have an idea I've done this with exactly the same kind of thing, but I would like to know what you think would happen.
I'm afraid I can't answer because I have never hypnotized anybody, nor would I ever, any more than I would give anybody software.
No.
I don't think it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't feel it's fair.
This must seem confusing and odd and so on, but I felt when you left, I felt really sorry that the interview had been kind of cut short, because I sort of felt maybe there were other things you wanted to say.
I don't know. I'm being moved, though, right? A transfer. And I was just wondering if I'm quite ready for a transfer. I've mentioned that it's annoying that woman talk or been yelling like that, but I really rather like sound at work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have been helping. I had thought maybe I could go home from there.
Mm-hmm.
I know being transferred means I'll probably be put to work in the laundry all day, and I don't feel quite up to that.
Mm-hmm. So that's one immediate thing of concern. Am I ready to face whatever's involved in moving away from the spot where I've...
You get kind of oriented to one place when you're here.
You get sort of used to it.
Oh, I meant to correct one thing. When I said no before, I didn't mean I was tired of talking to that doctor. I just meant no, that I was ready, that I wondered why I couldn't go home.
Yeah, yeah. But you felt you didn't quite understand you on that, that really...
He thought I was being blunt, and I just meant no, I didn't want to talk to him anymore.
Mm-hmm. And if I sense some of your feeling now, it is a little tenseness that maybe he didn't really get that. Maybe he thought you were
cutting
him off or something.
Yes, that's what I had thought, and that isn't what I meant. I don't know. I'm wondering if that transfer is a good thing. I mean, they make you feel so important around here, and still you aren't, but then when I go over to two, I know that's an open ward, that's a dormitory, and I've been wearing not so many of my own clothes because I didn't like the laundry room. Just what I'm quite ready for, that changed.
Mm-hmm.
Because my father and that don't come to visit me or anything, so I don't get out at all on weekends or anything.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure about this. Is it in the ward where you are now that you feel, yeah, they seem to make you so important, but then really you're not, is it?
That's really it. I'm important, but I'm really not.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't be on the other ward either. Well, I know that you're not very important when you move to that ward.
I see. So that if you're not very important where you are right now, you feel, and if you were transferred,
be
even
less
so.
Important.
Mm-hmm. So that's something that concerns you.
I think it means working all day in the laundry, too, and I'm not quite ready for that. I mentioned earlier that I had this tickling sensation in my knees when I was on 6C, when I was getting reception and Femco, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the doctor at that time if he would move me so I could go to work and work in the laundry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the transfer came today. I didn't ask to be transferred all this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it troubles you as to whether you're really ready to face some of the things that would be involved.
I don't know. There isn't much to face. It's kind of confusing, I think.
I see. It's more a question of facing the uncertainty, is it? What you mean?
I don't know what I mean. I just
right
know
now
that.
You feel kind of mixed up?
Well, I know there's an Anita on that ward that I didn't trust very far because she's the one that put me on shock treatment.
I see.
Or I think she did anyway. And still she put her arm around my shoulder when I came back, but she was the one that told me I had to go on, and I had done nothing that I knew of to be put on that kind of treatment.
So if there's something that's real confusing, it would be putting you next to a person who seemed to like you and put an arm around you, and by gosh, was responsible for shock.
That's right. Of course, she said it was doctor's orders, but I hadn't talked to a doctor that I knew of at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they gave them to him, even though that was a work ward, they had him go over to the treatment ward and then back to the work ward and then to work.
Mm-hmm. So Sure, hear all the explanations of his doctor's orders and all that, but you can't help but feel, is she really trustworthy? Because here she...
I don't trust people anyway anymore. Uh-huh. That's why I don't want them to trust me. I either believe in them or I don't believe them.
Uh-huh. And it's all or none.
And I don't quite think I believe in her very much.
Uh-huh. And really, with most people, you feel, I don't think I trust them.
That's true. I don't trust them. Either believe him or I don't believe him or I don't. I'm not quite certain whether I believe him yet or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe in trust anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that you feel has really dropped out for you, that just to trust people, not for you.
No, I don't trust them. You can get hurt much easier by trusting people.
Mm-hmm. If you really believe in someone and let your trust go out to them, then...
I don't have any trust. That's why I can't let any trust go out to them.
But... evidently, your feeling is that when that has happened in the past, that's the way you can get hurt.
That's the way I have been hurt.
The way you have been hurt.
I don't mind being moved. I mean, if it's another thing toward going home, but I don't get out anyway, and I don't know that he's my brother. I wrote a letter, but I didn't get an answer, and he never came.
It isn't, at least what I understand you to be saying, is it isn't this practical question of the move so much but it's the question of...
I'm quite ready for that.
Yeah. Are you ready for a next step? Is that...
I don't think I'm going to like working in the laundry, that I know, because I didn't like it either the other two times. And I don't think I care too much working in the food center over there either, because I worked there before, and I didn't care for it. Well, I didn't have anything. The first day I worked, all right, the second day I worked about half an hour and I blacked out, and I tried it three more days and I blacked out each day, so I just quit trying to work there. There was too much electricity or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Feel something was wrong over there, too much electricity or something. It really had a bad effect on me when I was working.
It did. I blacked out completely. If I hadn't gone and sat down, I would have been...
feel really you were in kind of a desperate way at those points.
No, I didn't feel desperate. I didn't understand it. I didn't know why I blacked out. It didn't frighten me, though.
There's something very odd happening to you, Mark.
Because I don't have epilepsy seizures or anything like that, so I couldn't imagine what it was. I don't usually have fainting spells.
It's made you feel real puzzled. What is happening to me?
What it was, yeah. I tried, but I couldn't work, and they wanted me to work, so... sometimes I think you could put back on treatment if you refuse to work.
So maybe shock treatment is really something they may use for punishment if you don't do the things they want you to do.
Well, it would appear that way from what everybody says, but I don't think it was even... I don't know why they even gave it to me in the first place. I was just beginning to come to enough to realize that I was in an institution, I think. And the next thing I knew, they said, you're ready, you're on treatment. And I said, why? I didn't do anything. I haven't had any fight or anything with anybody. And they said, well, doctor's orders. And I said, well, I haven't even talked to the doctor because I hadn't talked to him. At least I didn't know it if I had.
So to you, it seemed here I was just beginning to come to life a little, to really to know a little bit what was going on.
I was just beginning to realize I was in the hospital when they put me on it, and they put me to work the same day.
And then you feel that for no reason you could discern...
And I began talking very badly and everything, and I still haven't forgotten some of the things I said.
Uh-huh. It feels that as though that sort of brought out the worst in you. Is that what you mean?
If I had a worst, it was like it wasn't even me talking.
Uh-huh. Almost seemed as though...
And then I went home weekends, and I got in trouble there because I talked so much.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I was getting sodium amytal, too, so it might have been the combination of the two, not just the one thing. Did you notice I moved my feet? As
yes,
I said, my knees
kept
up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's the drugs I'm getting or what, but it's something I can't help. It isn't that I'm so terribly nervous that I can't sit still. That isn't it. I do that at group meetings or anything, and I can't control them. It's that intense.
Mm-hmm. And you would like me to understand that it isn't just tenseness or something.
No.
It's simply
something I can't control.
Uncontrollable tickling sensation.
In my knees, and therefore, and my feet just move. If I'm sitting up there in the corner alone, that isn't so much, but my knees still tickle.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get in a group and that, my... I don't know, it just moves.
Seems as though being in a group makes this worse.
Well, I have it when I'm alone sometimes, too. Mm-hmm. I think it's medication I'm getting.
Yeah, probably it's just the drugs.
I think it's the brain medication I'm getting. I don't even know what it is because I haven't asked Aunt Clegg once to finish. Mm-hmm. I think these meetings are very enlightening.
Yeah.
Well, she can't think quite clear at the time. We can think about it later.
Mm-hmm. But in that sense, they're somewhat helpful in making it more
clearly accurate. I think I've been helped a lot
accurate.
By more by talking than I have by the pills in there.
Mm-hmm. Really, it seems as though getting things out to some degree in talk
seems to leave me whatever the situation is. If it's a creative situation, that seems to leave you. At least that woman would quit screaming.
Yeah, why doesn't she stop?
She can't stop, though, that's the worst of it. That gives you a terrible feeling what's going to happen to you if you end up in like that.
Yeah. Part of the disturbance of that noise is the feeling, my God, could this happen to me?
Yes, exactly. And you think if you could just about go out of your head just from hearing that all the time. That's been going on for 3 days now. And why did they give her that much? If it's who I think it is, she was up on the ward for one of those GYN clinics, and I sat next to her, and she said something about liking to talk, and all of a sudden she just began talking and didn't quit.
But this seems kind of awful that here was this person, and
she was all perfectly all right, then calm. She
next to you and so on, and now here it's just going on and on.
I should think, I thought they could relieve those, not make them worse.
So that's kind of discouraging in a sense to feel that they, it seems to you that they aren't helping her.
Yes, considering it's an admission ward and they shouldn't be that far out of their heads. It's more like the drugs they're getting after the year are doing it to them.
Almost makes you feel, are they making her worse with their drugs, is that?
That's right.
And that's kind of a disturbing
I think it is.
Thought, too.
Because after all, I'm doing drugs, too, and I wouldn't want to end up like that.
Mm-hmm. You can't help but raise the question in you, would the drugs they're giving me make me like that?
That's right. And then once you're that way, what can you do about it? Only I know what they're like and I can see it, so I have enough control to hang on to myself enough to keep from just batting my head against the wall like you. Some of them have that feeling and they just can't control it. But I've seen so much of it and heard so much of it that I can hang on to myself a little bit.
Those things are kind of...
I think that's why my knees tingle, though, because rather than batting my head against the wall, I have that type of reaction.
So in a sense, you can hold yourself enough so that you aren't going to bash your head against the wall. And yet it's as though it has to come out somewhere, and it comes out in the tickling of your knees.
Mm-hmm. Because, I've seen him on the outside, too, so I mean, I know that it's just futile to bash your head. Why? Anyway, I think my head is valuable to bash against the wall. It's my own head, and I like it.
By gosh, I'm not going to smash my head against walls.
That's right. After all, if God gave me that head, that's the head I want. I'm not going to bang it against the wall, even if I'd like to. Which I really wouldn't like to do anyway. Well, how does that help that girl to be locked up like that and screaming like that? What beneficial aid is she getting out of that?
I guess that's the question you're asking yourself. What earthly good?
No, I'm asking you.
You're asking me. Well, I'm not on the hospital staff. And I really guess I wouldn't try to answer because I don't know her and don't know anything about it. But what I can understand is the way that affects you and the feelings that it stirs up in you. Because it sounds as though with you that is disturbing not only from the noise from her, but the things that it stirs up in you.
I don't know. I'm all mixed up. I want to go to Building 1, but still, I know Building 1's not the best from home tenants, but if I could go home from 1, I'd be happy. Yeah, I've been there before. I know it's going to be a great change from this building. I hate to leave this building because it's quite beautiful. But still, maybe it's better listening to that girl screaming all day, every day.
It's a real tough choice to make.
But I hate to think that I'm going to have to go to work in the laundry. I'd rather, and there isn't as much to do around that ward as there is here, that much I know.
To feel,
they let you relax and sleep because you do have this, but I don't think they do. I think they expect you to work if you can.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go that far as to just let you rest like you're in a hospital for a rest. Keep you working all the time.
If it represented a chance to rest, then you might like it. But if it's a chance just to work all the time, then you're not sure that...
I don't think I'm ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because my knees took, well, maybe that... I worked in the laundry before, and I know I got along all right. I know I can get along now, but...
Well, I could do it, but am I really ready for it? Why?
Well, I packed my own grip, so I'm all ready to go. I didn't say no, I won't go, because I'm really putting up a big fight about it. If it's an improvement, well, I'm willing to go along with it.
The chance you're willing to take, although within yourself you feel a lot of question about it.
I rather like to see them admit it, although I can't say that I like to see them get worse, but when they improve, it's quite a joy to be where they're all coming in and going out. And
it kind of helps you inside when they
know
that
others get well and can go home.
Mm-hmm. So you're sort of discouraged and encouraged at what happened.
I had thought that I'd
others.
Go home from here because I hadn't done anything very serious, or I hadn't had any violent struggle with anybody or anybody, anything like that.
That's part of your feeling all the way through. I haven't done anything wrong. I've held myself in. I've not been violent. I haven't broken many rules.
I haven't broken any, I don't think.
Broken any.
And half the time you have to find out what the rules are because they don't tell you.
But your feeling is, I've been good.
But I haven't been too good. Said you can go overboard about being good, too. I don't believe in that either. I've been as good as I know how to be, and I'm not very perfect. I would like to be, but I'm not.
But in terms of what you can do, you feel you've done the best you can do.
Yeah, as good as I know how.
Mm-hmm. Right, I know that some of these people have got to go, and I expect we've got to call it quits. Appreciate the chance to talk with you.
Thank you very much. I know that you're very important people, or so I've heard, you know.
Thank you.
She asked several times the reassurance about the way the hospital was treating these patients. Reassurance about the way the hospital was treating these patients, of which she was one. And I know you only meant the hospital staff, but still, you were there. You were the only person she could ask. I wondered why you didn't give her your reassurance of this instead of dissociating yourself from it, since you were a person in authority in this hospital as far as she was concerned at the moment.
I'll answer it. I want to make sure somebody in the hospital is here to hear my answer. Part of my feeling is I was dreaming about the hospital meetings, because in my experience, hospitals are made up of human beings, and human beings are in all the right thing. And I feel she's in a hospital, so the things she's uncertain about are these people treating people right, and if there's any assurance I'll get well, and so on. But if she weren't in a hospital, it would be other people that she's got the same kind of issue about. No, I for sure be trying to help her live with the situation, which I'm sure has bad elements in it as well as good elements. I wouldn't be caught reassuring it, if only I'm sure.
I'd like to get my impressions of the three different approaches, I guess the other two. I think with Hal,
who was working
Mr. Coogan.
With a defense that she had, and in that defense, actually stimulating it and mobilizing it in terms of inducing her to fight with him and to engage in controversy. As it was Dick, he didn't fight with her, but with his intrusive kind of warmth at that time, he was threatening her and thereby tended to remobilize her defense, namely, I don't trust you, you're trying to hypnotize me. I think Carl did neither of these things, but what he did do was not fight with her, thereby not giving substance or support or subsidizing this combative, controversial clowning defense. Instead, stayed with her on a level that she was prepared to stay on. Now, this brings us to another point, and that is, what is her motivation? She is not coming to get the therapy. She has her own ideas about what she's going to get out of this situation. I think her ideas have been the same for the most part, although she has secondary gratification, as she did yesterday. Her idea is, I want to have this jury help me in my hospital situation. And this was her continual preoccupation, and this is the thing that you of necessity related to. Namely, am I going to be transferred to this ward or to the other ward? Am I ready to be transferred? What can be done? So on and so forth. And in terms of motivation, I think that the most constructive kind of approach was the one that you used with her.
I feel perhaps part of her motivation is this jury notion that may well be part of it, though, is the desire to get somewhere within himself. So that I feel it isn't a question whether this person or any other is motivated for therapy. It's a question of whether I can reach that motivation, whether either that is so deeply buried you can't touch it, or whether you can in some way help the person to respond to it. One reaction I'd like to give a different start to this experience. I don't know what I did expect here to begin with, but I somehow sort of thought it would in some way kick off from her contact with Dick. And I was a little floored by this notion of the practical problem of transfer to another ward. But it's interesting to me, and it seems to me, that you've evidenced several times in that step, that if you're willing to stay with what is meaningful to the person, even though it seems like trivial administrative bunk, it goes
somewhere.
I mean, in each case, it led to something quite
significant. Right. I think the difference where it went has to do with the therapist, not with the patient. Right. I think there's a striking difference in the two therapies that we saw demonstrated, because they're both therapeutic industries. In the first place, I think Dick accepted her as another adult, and he met her friendly. More of that, with his feeling, and the exchange was in terms of his person, as well as her person. With you, there wasn't a single comment about her person. She once tried to ask you a question about the hospital, which is sort of a long way around to get to you. And it brought me back to some of the child guidance days, where the person and the therapist is doled out in real small doses because the disturbed patient is so little. And her response to this seemed to me was to become more and more dependent, even in terms of her transfer, which initially she announced that she was present.
On the surface, just as I understand, on the surface, possibly Carl's is more adult, but on a deeper level, Jake is dealing with the more adult material because he's confronting her more directly.
But what you confront this person with, when you confront her directly, is her babyish, most babyish self.
All I hear is leading in again, because I am all familiar with the participant in these things, and Carl's is unquestionably much different in my mind from Dick's, and much better, and it was better than mine because I was intent on doing something else than you were. I was intent on deliberately showing a technique, and you approached her therapeutically, by far the best of all three, as far as I can see, all three of us. But the significant thing was that this patient has not moved an iota. She is exactly where she was when she came in to me. She will be here, as far as I can see, 50 years from now, because I could just see you going on and on and on like this, and she's very concerned with specific problems, doing anything to you.
really solve the problem. He wants you to solve, or me to solve, or Dick to solve his problem. So how do you?
To me, this is a contradiction of what he said. At first, he didn't trust anything. Now she's saying she's putting some trust and faith in the hospital. I felt this could have been a nerve somewhere. Certainly, she's going to trust the administration.
No, she's going to let it through. I don't know. She's trusting herself more.
She simply said, I'm doing this because if I don't do it, I'll even beat my head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know why my position isn't used by you, Carl. I don't know. Just in terms of therapeutic technique, you got two things that she led you to, and I think this is your affirmed belief. I think, personally, I would use some juxtaposition. When she says, I don't trust anybody, and then she makes three appearances here, I think I would like to know, but you came here three times, and you say you don't trust anyone. When she said,
can I get that right here? Yeah. That's a very good example. That's certainly occurred to me. It's relevant. Also, all these equally strong things occurred to me. She was, you can say she was saying, I don't trust you either. I want her to know this and so forth. But the reason I don't do that is that, I'm here speaking from some of the physiological research we're just getting started, and I'm just talking off the top of my head on this, but I'll bet you that if you had used this response you speak of, we would have seen the PGR go shooting up. In other words, I would prefer to keep the threat level in the situation as low as possible, because in my estimation, that's the best way for her to deal with the internally threatening things.
And I would say that the threat level should be kept at some optimal level for the quickest movement. And I don't think the lowest level is necessarily optimal.
Well, let me put it this way, because we have a quick communication.
I would like to keep the external threat as low as possible, because then I think the person who left the internal threat rise as high as they can possibly.
With your physiology, how are you going to distinguish the PGR as the external from the internal?
That's
already
puzzled
rather than have no answer to that. That's
not
going to be possible.
Yeah.
And
it's
impossible sometimes.
I was watching this. I didn't see Alice's interview yesterday, but I think the problem you thought of a problem we're getting entangled with is which is the preferable approach to a certain situation. Now, I think, personally, that if I myself was carrying this as a case, I would probably start with your technique. I would move very cautiously, very slowly, feeling my way, letting her come forward. At some point, somewhere, I think I would move toward Dick's approach, being more provocative, even sexually arousing, as I think he somewhere, advertently or inadvertently, attempted to do. And then taking up some of these things, and eventually ending up, if there were movements around, assuming that there were, with something more on an intellectual level, and a direct exchange, if this ever became possible. I feel that this is a problem of the difference between an eclectic approach and an approach where we feel we've got to stick to one way consistently. I think that there's more likelihood that somewhere at a given point we have to shift from one approach to another. Now, this may not be true in all cases either. Some cases may be carried past totally in one fashion. Now, I would really like to know how some of the people here, including yourself, Carl, feel about this. But I think that this is an area we tend to neglect because we have so much vested interest in a given approach. And as a physiological point, I think that the high PGR sometimes may be a very important indicator of movement. Now, whether we can keep it high or permit it to fluctuate, I know in some of my schizophrenic patients where we have some records, that when we get this little shift, we know that something's happening, we can take it out and move.
And I'd like to say one thing, which I'd like to firstly underline, but I already have to what Henry said, but there's one addition which I felt is rather important in many of the cases we have seen. And this reminds me of what many of us perhaps have seen so often in diagnostic reports. We see so much of what's wrong with the patient, and often not enough of what's wrong with the patient. What do we have to work with in this particular patient? Now, I think in our sessions too, we often encourage what we say to patients to speak of what's wrong with them. And I saw, for example, in the session that you had here, Carl, where you spoke about trust, she spoke about trust, that she didn't start off by saying, I don't trust anyone. The initial attitude was, I either trust someone completely
or I don't trust them at all.
Don't believe them, or I don't.
All right, whatever. But what I thought was picked up more was the not trusting. I think this is the same as trying to control. You have a patient who may speak of fear or anxiety about maintaining control. But at the same time, his managing perhaps some kind of control. But we often talk about the fact that she's afraid of it rather than she has been able to do it. So that when I'm trying to get the patient to perhaps get some kind of picture of herself, an image of herself. We want her to see what's wrong with her, but we also want her to realize that there is hope in terms of the fact that there are things that are right with her, and that these are the things that are really going to help her get well.
Even more importantly, I put in that, I think, is not only want you to see those aspects, but to really live them. I feel that's what therapy is. You give them a chance to live the worst aspects of themselves, and you're scared to death. I also tend to live the constructive aspects, and I quite agree that there should be room for both. I could come in just to go back to Henry's statement just for a moment, because there's something I don't understand. And that is that though I think there is much to be said intellectually for an intelligent eclecticism, yet I would have to say, Henry, that you couldn't start with the same quote technique that I use today if in the back of your mind is the feeling that it is your judgment that you are trusting as to when to change this approach. Because a basic part of my approach, of me in this situation, was both for today, even when I had momentary feelings of, oh my goodness, that's pretty old dust and gone, I was willing for it to be her situation and to follow. In other words, if I'm only going to trust her potential for movement up to the point where I decide I better do something else about how to have her move, then that represents a different quality than really trusting her potential.
I agree completely with Carl's approach with this patient in this single interview, and for a very specific reason, among others. But the main reason being that with this particular patient, any interpretation or any comment or observation is construed as an accusation and as a challenge. Now, it seems to me that what you were doing in this interview, in my terms, was giving a very effective ego support in the sense that you were saying you are a person with choices. You choose this, which is your perception of things, this is the way you feel. This was constantly reminding her that you knew that she was a person capable of independent judgment, capable of making choices and having feelings. Now, I think that as this kind of supportive therapy, and I would call it supportive therapy, continues, a time is reached when her tendency to construe an interpretation as an accusation would be reduced. At that point, I think the patient dictates a certain change in our approach to her.
I'd like to throw in a question. What struck me was how they seem to be treated as people. I didn't see Al, but the comment about the person who could trade blow for blow was certainly a different person than I saw in a few of these other times. And thinking about this with respect to the problem of very terrible that we have seen, that he's having success. Maybe we have success because we work with our person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's wrong. I think we have unusual unanimity in the region here in Berger. In fact, that I agree with Bruce and I agree with Henry said, and I agree to a large extent with what Carl did today, in that if I was seeing this patient under normal circumstances, I wouldn't do it exactly Carl or anything like that. But for many sessions, I would just get her to open up and respond and so on and so forth. I completely skip what Dick does because I think it's very wrong. So he was way off the beam, but he didn't know what he was doing. He was completely autistic. He had no contact with the patient and so on. So I would skip that. But actually, I would get to my own thing. And I think that there has to be, with this kind of patient, who is a small minority of individuals, and I still have a basically poor prognosis for her in particular, that there has to be some kind of difference in movement and in technique, because I don't see how what Carl was doing, if done indefinitely, would get her to change her patient's philosophy or anyone else.
I think it's very important to be in my perception of this patient. It's very important to me. I'd like to try to say that. And the question is the thing that I like most about your approach, and that is your respect for self-direction and the function. And to me, this piece is relaxing because we're such a beautiful illustration of this in a way that had continuity from yesterday to today. I responded very much against what you said. When you said that truth, the automatic thinking today is a decision made because of yesterday that she was going to be good and cooperative. You weren't curious today. You didn't care for your response. What she said at the culmination of the attempted course indoctrination and conquer was, in effect, I will stay in this hospital and I will die before I will accept this indoctrination. Today, she came with a dream of a tooth which she wanted to keep, and somebody was trying to take this away from her. In my mind, it's interesting that this is new. And then when Paul learned this, then she was able to feel her own coming, and she was able to feel her own self-directing forces, and then she was able to arrive at the reality.
I'd like to say something, Henry, about this. Now, I wasn't here yesterday either, and that people who were where I was know that my general approach was very much more like Dr. Rogers, and I feel very strongly in agreement with what you have said. But I do believe that besides the dream, we have the evidence of her reaching out for other members of the group, which was certainly somehow related to what had happened before with Al. I think we have the fact that she came back for the taste, the fact that she came back to the very room and sat down. And I can't help but feel that if we're going to make some of the other interpretations made with some facility, and something positive must have been involved
for
her,
that was the subject. I agree with that very much. I think Al reached her. I think he reached her in a way which mobilized her. Her determination that she was not going to submit to voice and compulsion. I think he reached her, and it was effective, and she came back from him. And then I was so pleased that Carl was able to come to him and
say something about what you said, Jules, and what you felt that this was an ego-supportive approach that Carl was using and enhancing the positive
Yes, sir.
I think it's also important, I would agree with that, but as an author, she was allowed to admit confusion. And doubt.
And you're just ego-supportive, too, that I have a right to believe in my doubts and uncertainties, and I can acknowledge my confusion. I don't have to be perfect. You know, at one time, she said, I feel as if I ought to be perfect, and then she modified it. She said, well, I'm not perfect. And this, I think, is ego-supporting, to accept those limitations.
I
might
have started
using the same thing about it. Oh, that's
just
make you come in
and
prove
it. You'd better plug me that Dr. Ellis's percentage of health patients is probably equivalent to that of Dr. Rogers, and probably the same percentage would apply in general to the whole group. I don't know, but from all you read, it seems that way. And so the only inescapable conclusion you can come to is that there must not be anything horribly wrong with any of these techniques.
That's why we sent a good lesson.